You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There is a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for March 26, 2015. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live a day early and $24 billion short, it's The Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal.
Hi, Dr. Fest.
Hello, Blue Gal. How you doing today?
Well, my favorite tweet of the week was, you cannot waste $24 billion on a government shutdown and then call yourself a fiscal conservative.
Sure you can.
Ted Cruz did it.
He sure as hell did.
So congratulations, Ted Cruz, on being the first to announce your official candidacy for running for the president of Evangelical America.
Yeah.
And in it for the fame and the money and the attention. I think that's pretty clear. Go ahead.
And setting the agenda. He really wants to be able to set the agenda and make it his agenda.
Well, and the thing I find interesting about this is all of these Republican candidates, and we've talked about this before, start from a tremendous disadvantage in terms of the Electoral College.
Uh-huh.
Just way down there. They've got an uphill fight. And that doesn't mean a Republican can't get elected president, but it's getting there. And that doesn't seem to matter because, as you have said many times, they don't need the presidency to run the agenda. They can just block the presidency and get everything they want.
Exactly. Yep.
And they've figured that out. So Ted Cruz may never be president, but that doesn't mean that running isn't a great idea for him from the standpoint of getting what he wants. He will be president of that group of people that believe everything that Ted Cruz is telling them.
And there's and you and I both know people like this.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Who are their mantra. And this is why Ted Cruz is perfect. He is the perfect distillation of 30 years of Republican insanity. Because he will lead them over a cliff over and over again and blame liberals for the reason we have to jump off the cliff. And when they crash and burn, he will stand there tisk-tisking because they weren't conservative enough.
Mm-hmm.
And every conservative I know, that's the first excuse they pull out of the box. It's, well, if we just gone further, if we just sacrificed more virgins to the volcano god, if we had just been crazier, then everything would have worked out fine because conservatism cannot fail. Conservatives can only be failed. So he's perfect for the job that he has carved out for himself. And he has a built-in bunch of people. And he did go to the capital of Jesus land to announce his plans.
He did. He went to Lynchburg, Virginia.
Yep.
And he found a way to talk to a very specific audience.
Jerry Falwell's Diploma Mill University, where a whole bunch of Bush administration people, you'll remember, went to college.
And this whole thing with Ted Cruz and Liberty University makes me think about doing a Bible bitch.
Bible bitch.
That's not scriptural.
The Nightly Show last night, on Tuesday night, had a very good segment about Ted Cruz and evangelicals, and I was so glad they had Lewis Black on to talk about this. Yeah. But Lewis Black, the whole question of do we have to respect evangelicals, do you remember that? And the woman from The Blaze was on the panel.
Yeah.
Oh, well, you know, you have to respect their opinions about things, and there are a lot of creationists in America, and so we have to respect them.
Most Americans believe in creationism.
Uh-huh.
I believe it's a quote.
Yeah. And Lewis Black just wiggled his head in his hands and pulled his hair out, as he does.
Uh-huh.
And the entire panel, the rest of the panel, said, no, we don't.
No.
You don't have to respect someone that thinks the Earth is 6,000 years old. They have a right to that opinion, but that doesn't mean that they have to determine energy policy for the United States.
They
probably shouldn't. So I was thinking about that. Do we have to respect, quote unquote, evangelicals? And Ted Cruz's comment of what if all the evangelicals voted? You know, one of the problems is that less than half of the evangelical voters actually vote.
Uh-huh.
And I think he's counting a lot of people under 18 in that in that number. But what if all the evangelicals voted? What a change that would be. And of course, Obama had said the same thing this week about if we make voting mandatory, it would transform the country. But there's a big difference between saying if everyone in the country voted, it would be transformative. And if our little evangelical tribe voted en masse, we could change the world the way we want it to be.
Well, just as a brief aside, they did. And that was Karl Rove's 2004 strategy.
Yeah, yeah.
Putting anti-gay, gay bashing, gay hating
ballot initiatives
on all the states where they wanted to bring the evangelicals out to vote.
Well,
knowing that they would come out to hate gays and they would also check the box for George W. Bush.
Well, and regrettably, that worked for black voters as well. At the 2004, a lot of black churches came out and voted against those for ballot initiatives for marriage. And, you know, there has been evolution in that issue since then.
Yes.
But Ted Cruz appealing to evangelical tribalism, which is really anti-American when you think about it, that the idea that our little group of religious zealots will be the ones to run the country and that Jesus should run the country. Separation of church and state is what runs the country. That's in the Constitution. You want to take back the Constitution, you've got to take that with it.
Well,
Driftglass.
Yes.
They have to, because it's in the Constitution, whether they pretend to or not. Uh-huh. And I find it really hilarious, and I'm to the point now where I just want to projectile vomit on the TV anytime a conservative says founding fathers, because they want to convince themselves that there really is in their mind no distinction between the 12 apostles and the founding fathers.
Yes.
Founding fathers of this country are in their minds part of their tribe, part of their evangelical mission and American exceptionalism, etc. But what Lewis Black left out of the argument last night, he did talk about separation of church and state. But the thing I find equally dangerous to a tribal approach to politics is that once an evangelical feels that a member of their tribe is running the White House, they can then shut off their brains.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And it's George W. Bush is a good Christian man. You know, how many times did you hear that in 2004? And so the good Christian man who's of your tribe, and you can just decide to go to sleep because the good Christian man, your tribal elder, is running the country. He can go to war. He can kill. He can torture people. He can destroy the economy. Yeah. And it just doesn't matter because you've got your tribal leader in charge. And that is a reneging of your responsibilities as a citizen, as far as I'm concerned. So that to me is why we don't have to respect evangelicals. And did you know a lot of biblical apologists try to weave their way around this story? But the story of Jesus and the there are different ways of translating it, but the woman who comes to Jesus to have her daughter healed, and she is not of Jesus's tribe. She is not a Jew. Mm-hmm. She's a Phoenician woman. She's of a different race altogether from Jesus. And everyone in the room can identify by looking at her that she is of a different race. That is why this story is so powerful. And she's as smart as anyone in the room. People don't want to accept this story because it's the one place in the Bible where Jesus is corrected by a commoner, a non-Jewish woman commoner, and someone not of their race. And you see a lot, if you look at Bible commentaries, it's the yeah, but. Well, you know, this was Jesus actually showing the disciples by pretending to be wrong.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. He pretends to be wrong in front of this woman so he can teach a lesson. No, I think Jesus was really wrong in this case. He saw her. She was of a different race. He was with his disciples, and she is asking for help. And at that moment, he, the human Jesus, sees his ministry as being to his tribe. And she says to him, he says, "Why should I give bread to dogs?" That's what he says to her.
You don't hear that a lot in Sunday school, do you?
No, you don't.
No.
"Why should I give bread from the table to the dogs?"
Meaning her.
And she says to him, "Dogs eat the crumbs that are under the table. So shut up." And yeah. And he says to her then, "Whoa." he turns into Keanu Reeves.
Whoa.
Uh-huh. "Go now. Your daughter's already healed. Your faith has made her whole." Uh-huh. And sure enough, that's also the story of the centurion. And so the centurion who says, you don't have to go and heal my child when I send people all over and order them to do something, and I don't have to go check on them. You can order that my child be healed, and he's healed, and that faith is rewarded. So, but this is a place where Jesus is really corrected by a woman commoner who is not of their race. And so that tribalism is very pernicious. It even touched on, you know, the Son of God was tempted by that. In my the way I, and this is Bible bitch talking. I mean, you know, I'm not an expert, but I read it and try to have some discernment about it. And I think Jesus was just corrected by this woman. That's the way I read it.
As we learned last week, even CEOs screw up in public every now and then.
That's right.
And I just want to remind you remind the leaders, rather, you know this story, the this little asterisk. One of our favorite people was Katie Abrams.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Katie Abrams has disappeared into the obscurity of...
She's been absorbed by the Koch brothers board.
Tank.
Yeah. She's still out there in right-wing politics, but you
don't...
Oh,
she is.
Yeah.
She is. But she famously, she was the woman, the very TV friendly woman who stood up and lost her shit at those town hall meetings that we don't have anymore because
they're too embarrassing.
Yeah. Yes. But she was one of the people who lost her shit on camera, on cue, about, "I want to take my country back. I don't want my country turned
back." Well, and it was about Obamacare. It was about Obamacare. And she did not want her country turned into Russia.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Period. And she was, and Lawrence O'Donnell, bless his heart, had her on and had an extended interview, which is available on your site and mine, where he sort of probed, like, okay, because her bottom line was, "I never was involved in politics before. I never had anything to do with politics before. But now
the country is threatened in a massive way." Yes, yes.
And of course, during that time, during the interview, she mentioned that, well, she actually did used to debate politics with her friends. And she used to debate politics with her father. And, well, it just seemed like we've always been at war in the Middle East. So it was like no big thing that we had this war going on. So basically, this pinhead slept through 9/11, slept through the Clinton impeachment, slept through Iran-Contra, slept through the invading the wrong country, slept through torture, slept through the entire fucking, Bush administration. And was perfectly content with what she saw. Because the country was being run by a white, conservative, Christian man.
Yep.
And therefore, that was the proper factory default setting for this country. You don't have to do anything. It just runs itself because we put a white Christian conservative in the White House.
Whatever
he does is going to be fine because he's of my tribe and I know I can trust him. I don't need to do anything or think about anything. And conservatives shut their brains off for 8 years. Didn't have to worry about a thing. And then the black Democrat guy, got into the White House and suddenly her country was ruined. Ruined, I tell you. By that Negro, by that Kenyan usurper. He came in and ruined the place in just 10 short weeks. And every issue that she was hysterical about had been present and pustulant during the Bush administration. And there were people marching in the streets and were furious about deficits and war and the way this country was headed. And those people were called liberals. And those people were shouted down by douchebags like Katie Abrams, ignored by people like Katie Abrams, called un-American. Until the black guy put his hand on their Bible and took over their house. And suddenly this country has gone to shit. And that's why you cannot respect these people. You can acknowledge the fact that they have every right to say stupid shit in front of microphones. Absolutely. Would never want to take that away. But I have no obligation to respect someone who perverts Christianity to promote their ridiculous, fascistic political agenda. and pretend that, well, somehow this is all, we don't check each other's faith, because that's just wrong. Sure we do. When you strip mine Christianity just to find reasons to be a bigot, and then try to use your bigotry and ignorance under the cloak of Christianity to run my country, I have every obligation to oppose you. I have every obligation to treat you like a hypocrite and a Pharisee in my house. And that's what you are. You're using the letter, some letter of some law that you dug up to screw the people that you should be protecting and siding with the people you should be opposing. And that makes you a travesty of a democracy. That makes you the enemy of my country as opposed to a citizen. I have every duty and obligation to oppose you and respect you. Are you kidding me? Why would I respect a person like you? You have no idea what you're talking about. And everything you say and do points to the fact that you're poisoned from the neck up. So go ahead and talk all you want, but I don't know. And speaking of that, killing Jesus.
Yeah. that wonderful movie is based on that book by, wait a minute.
What's his name again? What's his name again?
Bill O'Reilly.
Bill O'Reilly, wait, that guy.
I thought we weren't allowed to mention him anymore since he was shown to be a liar, but now we just don't talk about that because his ratings are good, right?
Yeah, his ratings are great. And week three, we're now in week three of...
We don't talk about Bill O'Reilly anymore.
We're not talking about Bill O'Reilly. We're not going to mention Bill O'Reilly. Brian Williams has gone off to tend sheep in New Zealand somewhere, and he's off the headlines. And all the outrage machine has moved on to being mad about emails and Benghazi and Ted Cruz and whatever else. And we're all just going to stop talking about Bill O'Reilly. And again, as I promised you last week, we'll probably do this for a few more weeks. But it is just watch that thing disappear over the horizon forever. And once it's faded off over the horizon and nobody is being angry about Bill O'Reilly being a liar anymore and no one's mad about Roger Ailes employing a known fabricator and liar like Bill O'Reilly mm-hmm. anymore on purpose to tell bigots what they want to hear, they'll pop champagne at Fox headquarters because it works. Mm. All we have to do is just dig in and insist that he's our guy, don't respond to any questions, and move on to the next thing. And it works because there's nobody on the left who's willing to sink a pickaxe into Bill O'Reilly's public image and hang on and beat the shit out of him every day. We used to have somebody like that. Keith Olbermann used to be that guy. But we don't have that anymore. Mm-hmm. So Republican outrage, like every other thing, it's like a blog roll. It just rolls off the end after a couple of weeks and disappears into history. And what you and I remember or will remember a year from now is Bill O'Reilly was a liar and a fraud and shown to be so, and it didn't fucking matter. What conservatives will remember a year from now is Bill O'Reilly was proved to be right. The liberals were wrong, 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 because they're wrong about everything, because they hate this country. That's all they'll remember. That's how their brains are wired. So this is just a helpful reminder that this is week three of America Held Hostage. Bill O'Reilly, who? Except, of course, for his movie on National Geographic.
Geographic, yeah. Yeah. And some reporters who have written critically about Bill O'Reilly were denied credentials for the opening of the premiere of the movie, the event that they had to premiere this movie, which is fascinating. Out of respect for Mr. O'Reilly.
I understand that no one will be seated during the last 10 minutes. Because of the surprise ending.
Surprise.
Yeah.
Surprise. Israel has all the nuclear weapons.
Yeah, surprise. All the nukes in the region are, in fact, owned by one country.
Yeah.
And that country spies on our country.
Unbelievable. I mean, we're not going to get too much into that because we don't cover foreign affairs. But really, the spy versus spy stuff on the Israel front is not surprising. But the fact I was kind of surprised that so many conservatives who are out of office, Baker.
Yeah. Yep.
Is furious about this. That sure. A foreign leader would take information gained from spying on the executive branch and take it to Congress in order to disrupt negotiations.
Well, our Republican Party conspires with a foreign leader to embarrass and damage this country's government.
Mm-hmm.
I can't think of a clearer definition of treason than that.
Treason, yeah.
And they don't care because they know in a higher, more moral plane where they live that it's okay to do this because Barack Obama shouldn't be president.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And therefore, our tribe it's okay. Should be running the country.
Yeah. Our tribe. Everything's broken and wrong, so we need to side with foreign strongmen who are setting up an apartheid system in Israel, against our own government, because our government is illegitimate, because it's being run by a black guy who's a Democrat. Mm-hmm. And therefore, it's not legitimate. Therefore, what we do is okay. God forgives us for what we do, because we're doing it for the greater good, for Jesus Reagan. Mm-hmm. And you know, hallowed be his name. And I was going to say, part of that biblical agenda is screwing poor people.
Yeah.
And cutting Social Security and making sure that people have their insurance taken away, because that's what Jesus would want.
I want to talk about Starbucks, because you had such a good point this week about Starbucks. Last week, we talked about Starbucks starting this conversation on race with your baristas and write it on the cup and so forth. And the news media jumped all over that idea, said it was stupid, said it was awful, and Starbucks backed down, took it away and said, okay, well, this isn't working. The media doesn't like it. The mainstream news media categorically rejected this idea as stupid.
As stupid, yep.
And so you asked the question, Drift Class, can we Starbucks the news?
Yes. Can we
for
pretty
72 hours a year, one weekend a year. Let's make it Easter weekend.
Yeah. And
the opening of the tomb of truth, and say something like, you know what? Cutting Social Security is like writing about race on a Starbucks cup. It's really stupid.
Stupid and awful. You know what? Ted Cruz is awful, lying, stupid head.
Yeah.
Because everybody, this is what I just sort of was, because our news media, for the most part, except for the crazy liberals, such as the ones you're listening to now, are obsessed with never finding fault with anybody.
Yeah.
Never, ever, ever lay blame on anybody, because both sides, but that's why we have to respect people who believe the earth is 6,000 years old, because those are your people. That's your audience. You can't very well turn around. You know, Michael Steele loses all of his nice suits and his mortgage the minute he turns around and tells the GOP, screw you people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're a party full of bigots. And I'm not going to be part of a party that hates people like me because I am who I am. No, we can't say these things. We cannot say these things aloud. And all the way up to Chuck Todd have made it very clear it's policy not to talk about this shit, because then they won't come on your show. Except when it's the CEO of Starbucks and he does something incredibly stupid for I think sweet and understandable reasons. But everyone from I just did a quick look through CNN to Rolling Stone to the Wall Street Journal to LinkedIn, believe it or not, everybody just rained fury down on this idea as dumb and you're screwing up your brand. So it was this combination of the marketplace tapping the brakes on this thing, the actual customers. And the news media saying, are you out of your fucking mind? This is ridiculous. This is stupid. Which, look, 3 days out of the year, tap the brakes on every other stupid idea. The idea that you're going to shut the economy down because you don't get what you want is a terrible idea. And it's not the fault of both sides.
The GOP budget, the entire GOP House budget.
Yeah. Which
overturns Obamacare and keeps the savings from Obamacare to balance the budget.
Yeah, using
is
the serious
stupid.
Math. It was a lie. It's a lie. It's absolutely. And Paul Krugman, bless his heart, one of the very few liberals who has a national column who can be heard above the din of both siderism, wrote a really excellent column. And he's written this before, back when George Bush was running for office, I believe, or the first year he was in office. I remember Paul Krugman being on the Charlie Rose show saying, look, I'm an economist. I've looked at the budget. He spends the same $1 trillion twice. It's a fraud. It's a fucking fraud. He's making numbers up. And Charlie Rose, being Charlie Rose, says, you don't really believe that, do you? You can't really believe that. I mean, you're not really saying these. Because you're not allowed to call people who lie liars in the news. You're not allowed to call people who commit fraud frauds in the news, which is amazing to me. Because you are allowed to call CEOs who do something stupid, stupid in the news, as long as it's coffee and not the Defense Department, or it's not agriculture, or it's not Exxon, or it's not the Republican Party. In which case, you always have to mask it in this bullshit both-siderism. But Paul Krugman wrote, the modern GOP's raw fiscal dishonesty is something new in American politics. And it tells us something important about what has happened to half of our political spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
He's very clear. Mm-hmm. This is something that we have not seen before, that they just make shit up in their budget. They just They cut the shit out of everything. They're very clear they're going to do cuts to Medicaid, food stamps. They're going to end Obama's health care programs, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But
they won't. They won't say that they're cutting Social Security and Medicare, but they have to make the numbers if they're not going to cut defense. And they're not going to cut defense.
No. And where is the money going to come from? They're not going to say. They're going to repeal the Affordable Care Act, and that's going to cost them $1 trillion. Where's that money going to come from? They're not going to say.
Well, it doesn't tax cuts don't affect revenue, Driftglass. You know that.
And the idea that that just take that as an example, because everyone who's listening can think of 20 other examples, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. Just take this as an example. This is the document produced by the Republican Party for budgetary consideration by the U.S. Congress. It is a sham. I mean, all budgets are aspirational. All budgets put in things they want to do, and all budgets have tricks in them and so forth. But the idea that this is so utterly dishonest, so completely a lie from start to finish, and it's brutal, and it brutalizes the poor and the sick and the indigent, et cetera, is a story. That should be a story. It is every bit as fraudulent and as ridiculous as CEO Starbucks was stupid. But the news media felt perfectly fine dropping on Howard Schultz, head of the Starbucks CEO, like a ton of bricks.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And calling him out, saying, this is nonsense. What the hell are you doing? But they won't touch this. They won't touch GOP lies with a barge pole. They refuse to do it. And just once a year, that's all I'm asking, 3 days out of the year, over Easter, let's all be allowed to tell the truth on television. Imagine, to quote Ted Cruz, imagine what America would be like if 3 days out of the year, reporters were allowed to tell the truth about the conservatives and the Republican Party.
Or even just to cover the actual issue rather than the process.
Yes.
Because so much of what happens in the Beltway media in particular is that they cover what's happening in Washington and who's voting on what and why and what the political aspects. This is Chuck Todd's fetish, to cover whether something politically works rather than whether the issue at hand actually serves the American people. And I use the American people in quotation marks. There was a guy named David Kalb who had some great tweets this week about elite political discourse and establishment political discourse, and what the establishment means when they say that somebody is ideological. They mean,
yes,
you're challenging our consensus, yes, in Washington, even when the consensus anywhere else in the country is hugely unpopular and everyone thinks it's stupid. Everyone outside the Beltway thinks it's a horrible idea to mess with Social Security, period. It's a stupid, stupid idea. But inside the Beltway, the elite consensus is grand bargain. That will really be a great process to get things done. It's not. It's stupid. And a perfect example of this is the human trafficking bill.
Uh-huh.
It's going through, that's being held up by what the mainstream media is telling you is a debate about abortion. And that somehow, I mean, I'm sorry, but Turtle guy, the
Mitch McConnell?
Majority leader, Mitch McConnell, saying that this is the Democrats bowing to an ideological, you know, there's that word again, extremism in the abortion bill. No one is covering what they're really talking about. The real issue here. The real issue is, I'm going to lay down some truth now, Driftglass. This human trafficking bill is about giving funding to the FBI and federal law enforcement agencies to go after people who enslave girls for sex. That's a bipartisan, fully agreeable, everybody thinks it's a good idea to give federal law enforcement agencies money to go after people who enslave girls for sex.
Uh-huh.
Underage girls and boys, frankly. Mm-hmm. For sex. This is there's just no disagreement about this.
Well,
it's a horrible crime.
Tom DeLay might disagree.
Well, yeah, because the Mariana Islands, they have forced abortions, but that's in the service of capitalism.
That's right. That's so you can have American Made on your T-shirt.
Yeah.
That up. It's a horrifying story.
Mariana Islands, Tom DeLay forced abortions. Yeah, your hair will curl over this.
And he was and he celebrated that as a showpiece of capitalism.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's the human trafficking bill that is being held up over an argument over the Hyde Amendment.
Utterly non-controversial.
Non-controversial. However, Republicans want to put in this bill that none of the money that is recovered from the pimps and the traffickers, that's supposed to go to make whole the boys and girls and women and people who have been victimized by the traffickers. Okay.
Right.
Money recovered from evil people who are going to jail, hopefully, for what they did, should go to restore their victims. Again, that's not controversial, except that it might go to an abortion.
Yeah. Yeah. Might choose.
From a rape victim who has been enslaved for sex as an underage person. Okay.
You might choose to go have an abortion. That might happen, except of course in the states where there's one abortion clinic left because we've shut them all down.
Yeah.
You might have to travel quite a distance to get there, but you might want to do that.
And you might, as a former sex slave in some trailer somewhere, you might not have the resources to A, have your rapist baby, or B, abort your racist baby, your rapist's baby. Okay.
Or C, get on that John McCain's daughter private plane
and go over to Norway.
And go over to Norway where you can get it done safe and legal and nobody will talk about it.
No one will even hand you a pamphlet.
But this is a class bill. This is about rich people can have access to the service anytime they want and nobody says boo. Because it's your family doctor or it's your private physician or you'll travel outside of the country or you'll do whatever you have to do to get your daughter taken care of. But it's those poor people. It's the poors who can't have this sort of thing. And we need to be as merciless as possible.
And we can't have federal funding for abortion because our evangelical tribe will have a cow if we do.
Yes.
But it's not taxpayer money. It's money recovered by law enforcement from very evil people who have raped and impregnated victims. And that money is slated to go to the victims. It's not taxpayer money. And so the compromise that John Stewart was talking about last night and saying, oh, you know, finally there's a compromise, except now Democrats won't go along with it. The compromise was let's treat that money that is recovered from the evil people who have victimized girls, in this case girls, because girls get pregnant. Underage girls, we'll take that money and make sure that the girls are made whole. No, we're going to treat that like revenue. We're going to treat that in the appropriations. We're going to put that into appropriations. So therefore, that will make it status quo. We'll still have the Hyde Amendment because we're going to take that money and treat it like it is taxpayer dollars.
Mm-hmm.
And the Democrats are saying, no way.
No.
It's not taxpayer money. It's recovered by law enforcement from really evil people who've done really bad things. And that money belongs to the victims. That money belongs to the people who were victimized and impregnated by rapists.
You just explained this better than anyone I've heard on the news.
It's not that complicated.
It is,
and
apparently.
Yet the media cannot say it. It
well,
has
because...
to be about Washington and how is it going with, you know, the debate between Loretta Lynch and the human trafficking bill. And there's a conflict between Harry Reid and Mitch McConnell. And so let's not help victims of rape, because that's not really the issue here, is it, Chuck Todd? Asshole.
And that's icky and unpleasant to talk about.
72 hours to say. It didn't take me 72 hours to explain that to you. It didn't take me 7.2 minutes to explain that to you.
Nope.
But for some reason, it is beyond the mainstream media's ability to just say it.
Well,
that is a crime against this country and a crime
because
further victimizing crime victims in this country that this bill won't go through.
The end of that story is there are good people on one side of this issue and there are very bad people on the other side of this issue. And those bad people are the people I want to have on my Sunday talk show.
Yeah.
So we're not going to report the story that way, because that way would make the people I would like to have on my Sunday talk show uncomfortable. You know, if we start reporting that way, maybe Mark Halpern won't be able to give Ted Cruz a trophy.
A trophy. Gave him a trophy in public.
You know, and I believe me, I am right there with you.
I've got a trophy I'd like to give Mark Halpern.
Yeah.
I'd like to give him a trophy that has a victim of human trafficking right on the top. That's
well,
how I.
He's perfect for his job. Mark Halpern is perfect. He's a soulless, toady robot who doesn't move.
Republican dick sucker.
Yeah, that's all.
I'm not going to sugarcoat this.
No,
I'm so mad right now.
Yeah.
You just got my dander up.
Don't.
We got to switch gears, or I'm going to start weeping.
Don't cross the Bible, bitch. That's all I'm saying. Don't do it.
This has been an incredibly stressful and yet rewarding week. You have a special thank you you'd like to do a shout out, right?
I do. I would like to shout out a thank you to Mr. Charlie Pierce of Esquire magazine for essentially doing a fundraiser for me or a roundup, because I am going to do a formal fundraiser. You know, I didn't change my banner on my blog just for fun.
Yeah, it is 10-year blogiversary this week.
This weekend. This weekend is my 10-year blogiversary. But it just happened to coincide. It was preceded slightly by me getting laid off.
Yeah.
For the, what is it, fifth time in six years.
Yeah.
And just, you know, it's I'm tired of getting punched, and I'm tired, and it's stressful. It's, you know, you lose your insurance and you have to go back into the meat grinder that is the system. And even though the people who are in the system work really hard, the case managers work really hard, they're overwhelmed. And every service that I now need to contact and reactivate, because now I'm unemployed again, are the ones that Governor Hedge Fund is hell-bent on getting rid of.
Mm-hmm.
Because people like me don't deserve shit like that.
Right.
Okay. So... and the one thing I'd like to make a living doing, which is writing like I do and talking like I do, is just impossible for some reason.
Well, and Charlie Pierce said that.
Yeah.
He said, you know, the people that actually hire op-ed writers, really, I don't know where their brains are at. He said something about their brains, but
they're never going to hire someone like Driftglass.
Yeah.
But help a brother out. And he was very sweet, and he put links.
And your traffic kind of went up a little bit after Charlie Pierce linked to you, didn't it?
Yeah, it went up by not quite an order of magnitude, but it was incredibly sweet and generous of him, and awfully nice in every way.
Driftglass, would you read the letter from Kurt? Because we got a lot of letters. In addition to thanking Charlie Pierce, we want to thank everyone that has written letters of support to us over the course of the past 2 weeks, and... some of them have been so heartening that they have actually healed me of despair. And so I thank you for that. And I read this letter to you in the car on the way back from the P.O. box. And you and I both just looked at each other and went, oh, this is so nice. Mm-hmm. So Kurt's letter, would you read that, please?
I'd be honored. Blue Gal and Driftglass. I don't know why you get top billing, but you do.
I get top billing.
You do. Your podcast is an amazing gift. As a liberal in the permanent 1950s red state of Lindsey Graham, I cannot wait until Fridays when I can laugh, share outrage over Bobo's latest phoned-in articles, and complain about the general state of our worthless media, as well as try to compete with Driftglass's sci-fi knowledge over Dogface Herman's questions and clips. I can mostly hang in there. Voted best Dungeon Master during the AD&D convention 1982 in Dallas.
Congratulations.
Nerd sci-fi street cred, baby. Yeah, I got you, but we'll talk about that later.
You can have the argument about Dungeons and Dragons versus science fiction podcast.
Yeah,
on another podcast.
If only we had another podcast. Oh, we do. That's right. You two are a treasure, he said, returning to the letter. You see, many of us are middle-aged, passionate believers in the goodness of this nation, who believe that we are what we were told in public schools in the 1970s and 80s about just working hard and over the passage of time, you will get ahead. Just get that college education and your salary will steadily increase for you to pay off that loan. Who got married, had kids, and was able to somewhat plan for the future, and then got hammered in the Great Recession. Who were escorted out past colleagues who did not make eye contact, knowing they were probably next. Having had to dump our 401ks at the market lows, essentially allowing a wealthy person to buy our life savings at half price. to keep the kids fed, clothed, and the lights on. Marriage is strained, experiencing the shame of having to borrow from family and all that goes with it. Selfishly, I listened and enjoyed the podcast, but made a promise to myself that I would put some money in a tip jar when I could. Things are a little better now, so here's the first of my yearly subscriptions to come. Please tell your fans that every widow's mite counts. Is that scriptural, Blue Gal?
It is. Yes.
And to send in a few clamshells now and again, because we liberals always look out for the little guys standing up and speaking up for social justice. Very, very, very proud of who you are and what you do. Much blessings, Kurt. P.S. Drift Glass, you will land on both feet running. Hang in there.
Oh. Aw,
yeah.
Thank you, Kurt. We deeply appreciate your letter, and we appreciate all the letters we got this week and last week. Thank you for holding us up. We really appreciate it. Each week, we post to our Facebook page and website an internet kitty sent in by you, the listeners. But this week, in honor of Easter, Holy Week, spring, what have you, we are giving the internet kitties a spring break vacation. And internet bunnies are doing the heavy lifting this week. We have Bun Bun Stew from our friend of the podcast and friend of your blog, Mike Kay.
Yes, indeed. Hey, Mike Kay.
Bun Bun Stew eats like a horse and poops like a machine gun.
That's impressive.
I think you said that would be useful in the zombie apocalypse.
A mighty weapon to have at your side during the zombie apocalypse. Yep.
Bun Bun Stew would like to remind all of us that rabbits have become the third most surrendered and third most euthanized pet in the animal shelters of many Western nations. 60 to 80% of these rabbits were either surprise Easter gifts or spontaneous Easter purchases. Surprise gifting or impulse buying a pet is usually a bad idea, but especially for exotic pets like rabbits. Yep. Remember that rabbits are actually exotic pets requiring attention and care, and that the best Easter bunnies are usually chocolate. Yes, and surprise chocolate is always appreciated. So there's our little PSA about being very careful when you think about purchasing an exotic pet like a rabbit. You can send your internet kitty to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, or you can also write to both of us. Feel free to write us. We love hearing from you. Be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service. Go Postal Unions! Letter on the air unless you say otherwise. Don't forget our gourmet coffee guideline. If you can afford to buy an espresso-based beverage for yourself, buy one for us. We use your monthly contributions, those of you that give monthly, to pay our electric bill and our internet bill, and we appreciate that so much. Approximately 1% of our listeners support this podcast with a contribution, and you can too. See our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, for details. Please rate our show on iTunes or Stitcher Radio, and thank you. I went over and read our iTunes comments and Stitcher Radio comments the other day, and people are so nice. We just so appreciate that. Mm-hmm. So, Driftglass.
Yeah, Blue Gal.
How are the internet kitties doing this week?
Well, Blue Gal, the internet kitties, in hindsight, regret agreeing to be the opening act for Ted Cruz at Liberty University. But hey, a gig's a gig, right?
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-dovey. Let's forget about the whine and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with a switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
The Professional Left Podcast is recorded under Creative Commons license. Copyright 2015, Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.
Minecraft is awesome. Now it's time for Science Fiction University with our science fiction expert, Driftglass.
Science Fiction University is kind of special this week. It's a courtesy of our friend Arliss P. Bunny and the rabbits Tulip and Tulip's beloved life partner, Bunny Chesney. Huh? And this science fiction quiz is based on science fiction pop culture bunny trivia from Bridget McGovern at Tor.com. Are you ready for this, Driftglass?
I am.
All right. Let's try some of these. They're all rabbit related.
And I have my own bonus question for the audience at the end.
Oh, really? Yes. Are you going to remember it next week is the problem?
I'm going to write it down.
Okay, good.
Good.
That'd be good. Okay. Uh-huh. Number one, Elwood P. Dowd spent his days with this benign but mischievous Celtic puka named what?
Harvey.
Harvey, that's right.
My old man, who's not known for his social skills ever, was actually in that play when he was courting my mom, I believe.
Oh, my goodness.
Which was shocking. It's one of those Marty McFly moments. Really? Really? Anyway,
all
yeah.
All right. Number two. Harold, the family dog, narrates as the Monroe family, during a screening of Dracula, finds a baby rabbit named what?
That would be John Oliver, I believe.
No.
Is that right?
Banicula.
Banicula. Banicula. Yeah, yeah.
All right. Frank, this is number three. Frank became a cult hero in 2001 based upon his appearance in the movie what?
Oh, that would be Donnie Darko.
Donnie Darko is Donnie right. Darko. Very good. Frank.
One of the 11 people that saw that. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, here's number four. Hazel, Fiverr, and friends traumatized me with their story in the book and movie called what?
I believe it's Watership Down.
That's right, Watership Down.
And one of my favorite words, I think, is from that book called Varn.
Oh.
Which means you confront something and you just lose it. You just like stand there and let it run over you. You go Varn. Yeah. And I always thought that was a really appropriate word and regretted it not being more used in the English vocabulary.
Number five. What movie features the killer rabbit of Carbonog?
Well, there are 11 killer rabbit movies in the killer rabbit subgenre. But I assume Arliss is referring to Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
It's a most foul and cruel creature. Yes.
I told you.
But did you believe me? No.
Yeah. That's just a wonderful movie.
Number six. This 1988 live action slash animated movie, has long-eared characters as the romantic leads and is based very loosely on a book whose title starts with Who Censored? And the book is by Gary K. Wolfe. Do you know what this 1988 live action slash animated movie is?
Well, I know that the movie, I think the movie is Who Framed?
Who Framed Roger Rabbit? It's based on Who Censored Roger Rabbit by Gary K. Wolfe. Yeah.
I was going to go with Jar Jar Binks.
No, that would be good. But
yeah,
I don't think Jar Jar Binks was a romantic lead. No. Okay.
No. Not at all.
Who is the famous literary character that is mad as a March hare?
Oh, he shows up everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
That's the White Rabbit from Alice
in Wonderland. Right.
And
that's
he shows
right.
up in The Matrix.
The Matrix as a tattoo.
As a tattoo and other places. And Jefferson Airplane, I believe.
Yep, that's right.
So, yeah, iconic literary character.
Number eight. What monumental flop of a movie, released in 1972, is based upon the Australian science fiction novel The Year of the Angry Rabbit?
See, I know this. And I believe, for extra bonus points, this is one of the movies playing sort of in the background of The Matrix.
My goodness.
That's how nerdy and how, Zapruder film-like people in my crowd went through The Matrix.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember this movie vividly. It's the Night of the Lepus.
That's right.
The awesome Night of the Lepus.
The most obscure question on this quiz, and it's the one you know right off the bat.
Oh, hell yeah. Hell yeah. Again, killer rabbit subgenre is a broad and verdant subgenre.
There's only a couple of them. And...
Yeah.
All right, nine. At the beginning of The Legend of Korra, K-O-R-R-A, only Jinora can see these adorable spirit creatures. What are they?
Oh, I don't know. Some sort of hallucination caused by absinthe, I'm guessing?
No, it's dragonfly bunny spirits.
Oh, I had that at a bar once, and it was not as good as it sounded.
Tasted like pineapple, right?
It tasted like pineapple and chicken, and that's just,
bad combination. Okay, number 10. Wallace and Gromit adopt Sweet Hutch, who turns into this vegetable-crazed creature.
It's unfair, because I love Wallace and Gromit, and I have no idea what this is. So.
This is the were-rabbit in the movie Wallace and Gromit, The Curse of the Were-Rabbit. I don't think you've seen that one.
I haven't, and that's a shame. As a Wallace and Gromit aficionado, I am abjectly apologizing to both Wallace and Gromit.
Gromit is a great knitter, too. Knows how to knit. Wool features prominently in several of the Wallace and Gromit movies. Knitting. Okay. Number 11, and this is the last one.
All right.
Which Joss Whedon demon character professes her fear of bunnies in the medley, I've Got a Theory, Bunnies, If We're Together?
Well, if it's Joss Whedon and it's demon,
that sort
of narrows it down to either the commercial he did that he's ashamed of for Burger King.
No.
I don't think he ever did a commercial for Burger King. Or Buffy the Vampire Slayer, but I have no idea what
it character. Is Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and it's Anya Jenkins. She is a character in Buffy, which I don't think you watched Buffy. John Amato at Crooks and Liars is a huge Buffy fan, but
I watched it off and on because it was a very fine series. I just never it attached itself to me in the same way that, say, A Better Call Saul has.
A great show. Yeah. Okay, Arliss P. Bunny, thank you very much, and to your rabbits Tulip and Bunny Chesney, we deeply appreciate you sending this very special edition of Science Fiction University to us.
And
happy spring, everyone. I always just say happy spring. Oh, yeah, and the bonus question from Driftglass. Yes.
I have one bonus question for the audience.
Okay.
What American Depression-themed classic features rabbits prominently?
Oh, is it Grapes of Wrath?
Yes. No, it's not Grapes of Wrath.
Oh.
What's his name? Michael and Me, or Roger and Me. It's not Roger and Me. Rabbits, or pets, or meat. That is the new American Depression, and it's entirely appropriate. Oh, this is a classic of American literature that features.
Is it the one about the retarded brother? Is it that one? What's the name of that one? Of Mice and Men.
Yep.
Of Mice and Men. Yeah.
Tell me about the rabbits, George.
Yep. I do know that one. It just took me a while to get it.
Yeah. Well, that's why it's a bonus question.
It's a bonus question.
And Tell Me About the Rabbits, George goes up there with Carol saying, look at the flowers.
Look at the flowers, yes. And speaking of flowers, happy spring, everyone.
It is now spring,
whether you have snow in the air or not.
Yes.
And some people still do. It is spring, and we are grateful for it.
We are. We scraped ice yesterday.
Ugh,
it is truly spring. Spring has arrived. And the reason we are, in fact, doing this podcast a little bit early is we have to move some children all over the country.
Right. We have to launch some children on their spring break trip with their dad. So that's going to take some time. But
until next week, boys and girls, moms and
dads. Why we're so chipper is we're going to be kid-free next week.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, have a great week, everybody. We love you.
Love you guys. Bye.
I love you, Driftglass.
Love you too, Blue Cat.
Bye.
Bye.